Tuesday, June 5th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. We all too often hear, what can I do? I'm just one individual. I can't make a difference. And as the odds are certainly not in our favor in many ways, that is exactly what they want you to think. Because if and when we once again realize the power we wield if truly unified as the American people, there is literally nothing we cannot accomplish, which is why we're conditioned to think we're rivals, separate, weak, and helpless, without their protection, of course. But this is all the lie, the manipulation designed, cultivated over centuries to keep the serfs in place, under control and subservient. But the truth is quite different. And there's no better day than today to exemplify this point. As 29 years ago today, an unknown man chose to take a stand, literally, and stood alone blocking the path of an entire army of Chinese tanks, refusing to let them pass. The day after a horrific display of government violence and democide in China, this unknown man became a hero. And one that would reverberate all the way to today, with shows of defiance and protest in his honor, despite China's effort to censor and erase this man from history. And he shows us not just that one man can indeed make a difference, but the overwhelming importance of simply taking a stand against tyranny, and how doing so can quite literally change the course of history by spreading that courage to others. This man's identity and his fate have remained a mystery, but his actions have not only taken root in the hearts of the oppressed for decades, but they've literally inspired different generations to recognize the different kinds of oppression that take place on a daily basis. As James Corbett said in his video about the TSA becoming a Milgram experiment, disobedience once modeled becomes an option in the mind of the public. So never doubt how much an impact you can make and your actions can make on everyone else, especially in the age of the internet. And I have a lot to talk about today, so I'm going to try and make this as concise as possible, but I was unable to broadcast yesterday, so I'm trying to include everything that I find that's important. So bear with me if it's a little bit longer than usual today. First story of the day coming from Mint Press News, Israel aiding Saudi Arabia in developing nuclear weapons. The Israeli government has begun selling the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia information on how to develop nuclear weapons, according to a senior official at the Israeli military organization, IHL. Israel's Homeland Security. Ami Doron, a senior nuclear commentator at the organization, which is partially funded by U.S. weapons giant Raytheon, no surprise there, came forward because of his concern over the emerging nuclear arms race in the region. The cooperation between the two countries is helping the Saudis to develop a nuclear weapons program is just the latest sign of their warming relationship. The Israelis recently calling the Saudi crown prince a partner of Israel. I mean, how much more obvious examples of hypocrisy do we really need? I'd be very surprised if this is even touched on by the Trump administration or the mainstream media, even while they continue to demonize other countries for even choosing to seek out a nuclear program, and despite the fact this is a direct violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But I doubt we'll hear anything about that because it's a U.S. ally of Saudi Arabia. Now, both Israel and Saudi Arabia have justified their acquisition of nuclear weapons by citing concerns about Iran's nuclear capabilities. However, Iran, unlike Israel, has never developed any nuclear weapons, and its capacity to develop one is virtually nil under the conditions set by the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Though the U.S. recently left the deal, Iran has since announced that it would continue to abide by the agreement if the other signatories also agreed to do so, which is exactly what we're seeing take place. And also, unlike Iran, Israel's continuing to carry out egregious human rights violations against the Palestinians. And the next story coming from globalresearch.ca, Israel bombs Gaza hours after funeral of murdered 21-year-old paramedic. Now, this is just a quick one I want to touch on. It's something we've covered in depth over the last so many weeks, and it's something that's been ongoing for decades. But essentially, this 21-year-old paramedic was murdered, and we talked about it recently, but a picture has recently come out showing her with her hands up just before she was shot. Just another example of an egregious human rights violation, and the simple fact that Israel is once again bombing Gaza, which is getting absolutely zero attention. This is just an ongoing story that's continued to get voted down in the UN by the United States and completely ignored by the Western media, despite glaring proof just like this showing just how terrible these events are and how people are literally getting murdered simply because they're Palestinian, or simply because they're trying to help the Palestinians, or simply because they're trying to document what's actually going on. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com, Department of Homeland Security compiles list of all bloggers, journalists, and social media influencers. The Department of Homeland Security just announced that it intends to compile a comprehensive list of hundreds of thousands of journalists, editors, correspondents, social media influencers, bloggers, etc., and collect, quote, any information that could be relevant about them. So if you have a website, an important blog, or are just very active on social media, the Department of Homeland Security is going to put you on a list and will start collecting information about you and likely those around you. Just a few days ago, a Department of Homeland Security representative stated that those that are questioning this program are, quote, tinfoil hat-wearing black helicopter conspiracy theorists. Tyler Holton, a DHS representative, said if you find yourself skeptical of this proposal of mass state monitoring of the press, consider yourself a bona fide member of the tinfoil hat-wearing black helicopter conspiracy theorists. He claimed it's all very routine, casting the project as an innocent means of monitoring current events. Basically, just shut up and let us do this, crackpots. It's first of all, the idea of the black helicopter concept has been openly admitted to. So that's kind of interesting that that continues to get thrown out. But anytime they reflexively call someone a conspiracy theorist for simply asking questions, with all the history we now know of conspiracy theories being revealed as true, most importantly, something like the NSA spying on us, which was just, oh, you're crazy if you think that. And then, oh, guess what? We're doing it for your protection. This is exactly what we've started. It starts out as reflexively dismissing any kind of questioning. And this is a very alarming concept for people like myself and anyone that actively speaks out about things that are going forward today. It's leading us towards some kind of authoritarian state. This is a very alarming prospect. And another article coming from activistpost.com, DHS to give anti-government stories sentiment ratings. According to the Department of Homeland Security, story sentiment is one aspect this database will also track. Sentiment analysis will help DHS decide how the public actually feels about the government and any given story they're looking at. DHS wants to track, quote, any and all media coverage related to the Department of Homeland Security or a particular event, which essentially translates to a vast compilation of any dissenting voice and how influential they are on the American public. And this in general, this story altogether should be very alarming to any free Americans out there. Moving on to the next story coming from activistpost.com, Syria, Russia warn of potential chemical weapons false flag staged by U.S. terrorists. As Syria prepares to liberate the southwestern portion of the country still held by Western-backed terrorists, the United States is repeatedly threatening firm and appropriate responses against the Syrian government, proving yet again that the U.S. is nothing more than al-Qaeda's air force. The chemical attack narrative has been used repeatedly in both administrations to justify war crimes, crimes against humanity, and imperialist military assaults against the secular and sovereign government of Syria. This is why fresh warnings coming from Russia and Syria over the possibility of yet another staged chemical attack in Syria should be taken very seriously and watched very carefully. According to a report by Syria News, the Syrian National Committee on Implementing the Chemical Weapons Convention is warning that the United States is in fact preparing a new false flag chemical attack to use as a justification for an attack on Syria. The SNCCWC, according to a statement provided to Syria News, stated, quote, families were brought from the areas under SDF control to the illegal base set by the USA in the Al-Jafara oil field northeast of Syria, where they have been trained for about 5 days on how to act like the fake chemical attack in Douma. The committee cited reliable information in its possession. The SNCCWC told Sana, Syrian Arab News Agency, that ISIS will act in coordination with the SDF and U.S. forces in the base in order to stir up provocations with the SSA near the Al-Jafra oil field. Specifically, a false flag chemical attack will be staged in the village near the oil field. So this is a very alarming thing to hear. This is something we've talked about in the past, where Brandon Tuberville has made this point in the past where he openly talked about how they were calling these things out, and then we saw something take place. And why that never gets regarded is beyond me. But it's very clear that these kind of things have happened in the past. We've shown that without fail. And now, again, they're very, very clearly pointing out that they were staging this. We even talked about this about a month ago. Very clearly preparing for another one of these to happen. And this all stems back to the idea that Syria is very clearly taking back its territory, which goes against exactly what the United States military is trying to accomplish there. A great video done by Syriana Analysis basically shows this very clearly, and it is basically showing how the United States is, and I've talked about this also in the past, is that the United States is essentially protecting the last faction of ISIS in Syria. You can see very clearly here, these gray areas are exactly where ISIS forces remain within Syria. The red there is Syrian forces, and the yellow is United States forces. Now look closely at the gray area right in the center here. What's being reported by everyone except the United States is that ISIS is basically dancing back and forth between their area and the red area here, which is the Syrian forces, while U.S. forces are right behind them doing nothing about it. Essentially allowing them to jump in and out and attack Syrian forces while being protected by the United States. And as the point he makes in this video, as you can see this other area here where the gray is behind it, why is the United States allowing that to stay there? There's a reason. And the point he makes very clearly is that all of this is predicated on the idea that the U.S. military is in Syria to combat ISIS, not to fight Assad. That's kind of like this, you know, pretending afterthought. Oh, well, while we're here, we're going to fight Assad because, oops, he gassed his people again. But what's really going on is they're using this last faction of ISIS to remain in Syria, when we've proven that ISIS in general, as well as Al-Qaeda from the very beginning, have been a U.S. proxy for exactly this kind of purpose. So now that we're hearing they're preparing yet another chemical attack, we need to keep this in mind as these things go forward. And when this likely happens again in the exact area that they highlighted, we need to remember this and make sure we don't fall for it yet again, or rather the vast majority, because likely you guys watching this show won't even fall for anything that comes from the lies of the Western media. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com, NATO deploys 30,000 troops to Eastern Europe, launches massive drill to confront Russian threat. A massive U.S.-led military war drill with more than 18,000 soldiers from 19 NATO states has begun across Poland and the three Baltic states of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. The U.S. Army Europe, which I find interesting, is the phrase U.S. Army Europe, said Monday that Sabre Strike 18 exercise has commenced, and, quote, brings full-scale battle simulations for the service members involved to enhance their real-world military occupations and development logistics strategies. The war drill will take place in the Baltic states from June 3rd to the 15th as, quote, a demonstration of the commitment and solidarity of the alliance at a time when Russia's military is, quote, increasingly threatening NATO members, which I think in general is kind of just an open, bold-faced lie. I mean, really, we've seen the opposite of that from Russia openly, and I think outside of NATO members, that's kind of generally acknowledged. The report stresses, however, that Sabre Strike 18 is not a provocation of Russia, which is funny. It's just completely contradicting what they're putting out there, even though Russia says year after year that it is. Russia has traditionally criticized NATO for performing military drills in immediate proximity to Russian borders, as well as the ongoing army buildup, which is interesting to point out as well. This is something that this agreement has been disputed since the beginning of it, essentially between Gorbachev and the creation of NATO, that essentially NATO would never move past Germany. And they claim that was never the deal, even though there's proof that it did actually happen. So point here is that NATO just disregarded that deal and is continuing to move right up to Russia's borders. Now, speaking at the Munich Security Conference in February, former Minister Sergei Lavrov explained that, quote, nothing NATO is doing right now is increasing anyone's security, which I agree with. This is just open provocations, which all of these drills tend to be, which is kind of the point I'm getting at. Meanwhile, tensions between Moscow and NATO could escalate further as NATO prepares to increase troop reserves even more, citing diplomatic sources in Brussels reported that NATO is preparing to deploy a 30,000-strong reserve force, plus hundreds of warplanes and vessels for quick deployment in the event of an invasion by Russia. This is just very interesting. There's so much propaganda involved in all of this. This claim, all these drills are always like, oh, it's just a casual U.S. war drill that we do regardless of what's going on, which is nonsense, absolute nonsense. And the point they're making here is that the U.S. is basically saying this is not a provocation towards Russia, but this drill is out to confront the threat of Russia, which doesn't make any sense. And then kind of to see the same exact thing going on, we see it also another story from Zero Hedge. U.S. plans significantly more South China Sea war drills to counter China's new reality. So basically the exact same thing happening over with China, and they're very clearly saying this is to counter what's going on with China. So however they're trying to frame it, it's just to make it seem like this, when it benefits them, oh, these are just casual war drills we do all the time. But then when it's important to point out, to show strength or whatever they're trying to propagandize, that clearly these drills in this place are to counter China's rising threat. But over here with Russia, oh, those are just normal drills. It's just the same nonsense we see all over the place. Also with North Korea, where the drills are clear provocations, as it's plainly obvious. But of course, they do that, you know, they just claim, oh, that was planned years ago, and it always happens. But these are all provocations. They're all meant to demonstrate the strength of the U.S. military, which is a kind of a joke, because the U.S. military, like we've said before, spends more money than the next 9 countries combined. The U.S. accounts for more than half of the world's military spending. It's very clear, with 20 of 41 possible aircraft carriers in the world, that the U.S. military is the largest in the world. So all of these drills are simply open provocations. Moving on to the next story, coming from the freethoughtproject.com, Rothschild's NXIVM sex cult connected to alleged child trafficking bunker found in Tucson. A group of veterans known as Veterans on Patrol, which looks for homeless veterans around the area and offers them help to get on their feet, spotted solar lights while on patrol in Arizona and followed them until stumbling upon an underground bunker that, according to the group, is being used for child trafficking. The group found trees equipped with restraints, a stroller, a crib, hair dye, pornographic material, children's underwear, a knife with blood on it, and much more. And inside the actual bunker, they found a dresser with 2 crates and children's toys. And the area inside was only big enough for a child to fit inside. Now, there's a lot of information in the story, and I'll have a lot of links for you to check out. This is impossible to think as anything else when you actually see what they're talking about here. These, what they're calling rape trees, to very blunt term, is very clearly exactly that. There's restraints on these trees with harnesses and pornographic material and children's underwear. I mean, there's all kinds of really messed up stuff going on there. And ultimately, the police are just for basically disregarding it, so far as I can tell. They did come out after everyone was spreading this around. They were basically ignoring them. And at first, they actually arrested 2 of the veterans before releasing them, because clearly this is becoming a large story. But for trespassing, apparently, but clearly there's something going on here. And I feel like they're trying to cover this up. But this is a disgustingly obvious, basically the story comes back to the idea of these coyotes and human trafficking across, or basically rather just smuggling immigrants over to the United States. And then while doing so, kidnap the children and traffic them. And this is what they're saying in the story here. And this bunker and everything else makes that pretty damn obvious. Now, interestingly, the land on which the bunker was found is reportedly owned by CEMEX, a multinational building materials company based in Mexico that is a partner of the Clinton Global Initiative and partially owned by wealth management firm Bronfman E.L. Rothschild LP. Additionally, CEMEX received a $7 million contract from the Clinton Global Initiative nearly 2.5 years after the quake to build houses in Haiti during Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State in 2012, which I find interesting there, the connection with Haiti. We've clearly talked about the story of a woman named Silsby being caught on record trafficking children from Haiti, and the Clintons basically getting her off the hook. Now, here's where the connections get interesting. The CEO of Bronfman E.L. Rothschild is Lady Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, who is both a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and a confidant of Hillary Clinton. Ironically, the mayor of Tucson also happens to be named Jonathan Rothschild, and in Tucson, Arizona is where all of this is happening. And the story potentially intersects with the NXIVM sex cult, where we see that the chairman of the board of Bronfman E.L. Rothschild is Matthew Bronfman, one of the heirs to the Seagram's liquor fortune. Bronfman's sister, Claire Bronfman, is the operations director of the Clinton-connected NXIVM sex cult, while his sister, Sarah Bronfman, is a Clinton Global Initiative member. In response to the recent arrests of NXIVM members, Keith Raniere and Allison Mack, Claire Bronfman made a statement on her website denying the accusations against Raniere and praising him and the NXIVM programs, even though we've seen very clearly that this is very much not what she's trying to claim it is. Frank Parlato, a former NXIVM publicist turned whistleblower, told the New York Post that Bronfman is among the harshest leaders in the NXIVM organization. He said, quote, "She's the enforcer, a brutal one. Claire's running the operation now, and she's the most ruthless of them. I'm issuing an absolute warning now. Claire Bronfman is a true fanatic, and if there's a Jim Jones situation, everyone will commit suicide but her." As the Free Thought Project reported on April 27th, the majority of the funding for NXIVM, over a reported $150 million, came from the trust funds of Seagram's heiresses, Sarah and Claire Bronfman. So I just don't know how many of these connections we can actually continue to ignore until we see very clearly that there is something going on here, whether this connection, human trafficking aspect in Tucson, or simply the NXIVM cult connected to the Clintons and the Rothschilds. There's very clearly something going on here. Now, I recommend everybody dig into this story, this article specifically from the Free Thought Project, which is there's a lot of information here and any of the links that I have below. But you come to your own decision based on the videos you see and the connections we've shown and the very clear example of what's going on with NXIVM. I think it's damn near impossible to deny that there's not something going on here. And if the cops end up not finding anything or not investigating, I think that also shows us their people are making sure that this doesn't move forward, because there's some very powerful people involved in all of this. And one other story that I just want to quickly touch on, coming from the antimedia.com, staff calls cops on senator trying to see immigration detention center in former Walmart. Now, these may not be connected at all, but something tells me that they're somehow interconnected. And the story is U.S. Senator Merkley essentially tries to go to this detention center and just get a tour, and they not only will not allow him to come inside, but they actually call the police on him, which just seems very odd for a U.S. senator simply wanting to see it, and they refuse to let him in. Just seems like there's something very weird and ominous going on here, and we've already shown you very clearly, and even by their own admission, that a lot of the children end up in these facilities through Child Protective Services and immigration are almost facilitated and tunneled right into human trafficking. Again, by their own admissions, a lot of the children end up in that, going to that route. And so now we're seeing this very weird Walmart with blacked out windows, supposedly housing all these children. They won't even allow a U.S. senator to get inside the building. And everything about that story felt very wrong to me. And there's a great video by Chris Simpson that I highly recommend you check out, which goes into some of the connections here, showing that the group running that building, called Southwest Key Nonprofit, also happens to have locations in Arizona, which Tucson is exactly where that's all happening with the weird bunker. So something seems off in this. So I highly recommend all of you dive into this and continue to research. Make sure you send any information my way so we can continue to report on it. But there's something very weird going on here with this separating of children from their families. But the other point Chris does make is important to understand. This goes well beyond the two-party paradigm. It's clearly trying to be bent into one side or the other. And he makes the clear point that a lot of these policies have been going on well before Donald Trump. So don't get pulled into that. This is about much more than that. Interestingly enough as well, the United Nations has called on the U.S. to stop separating families at the border. The United Nations Human Rights Office called on the Trump administration Tuesday to immediately halt its accelerating policy of separating children from their parents after they crossed the U.S. border with Mexico, insisting there's, quote, nothing normal about detaining children. And I very much agree with that. I think this entire policy is designed to penalize people for breaking the law, which laws are one thing, but when you're making these spiteful rules about separating children from their parents, not only does that kind of facilitate all the sinister things we're talking about, but it, you know, whether he's behind it or not, there's definitely people involved in these government organizations that we've shown verifiably in the past are involved in these kind of things. But it also just seems very malicious. And again, this is beyond the two-party politic idea. This is something that goes much larger than that. So please look into this, all of you out there, and find anything else you can about either CMEX or the Rothschilds or the Bronfmans or this company, Southwest Key Nonprofit, and find out if there's any connections there, because something just does not feel right about it. Now, to end today, I want to discuss a report by Professor Philip Alston, who traveled the U.S. on behalf of the United Nations to find out if the existence of extreme poverty undermines the enjoyment of human rights by its citizens. And what he found out might actually shock some of you, but I'd argue that many of you watching this are probably aware of most of this, but it's pretty alarming to see all at once. Now, according to Alston, the United States is one of the world's richest, most powerful, and technologically innovative countries, but neither its wealth, nor its power, nor its technology is being harnessed to address the situation in which 40 million people continue to live in poverty. That's an alarming statement in and of itself, which is kind of a summation of everything he gets at there. But the idea that none of its efforts are going towards actually helping or trying to solve this problem, which is something I've said quite often. Now, some of these points he gives off are pretty shocking. He says, by most indicators, the U.S. is one of the world's wealthiest countries. It spends more on national defense than China, Saudi Arabia, Russia, United Kingdom, India, France, and Japan combined. Which we've pointed out many times, and even more than that, it's the next nine countries combined. U.S. healthcare expenditures per capita are double the OECD average and much higher than in all other countries. But there are far many fewer doctors and hospital beds per person than the OECD average, which doesn't really make any sense. The U.S. infant mortality rates in 2013 were the highest in the developed world. How is that even possible? Americans can expect to live shorter and sicker lives compared to people living in any other rich democracy, and the health gap between the U.S. and its peer countries continues to grow. U.S. inequality levels are far higher than those in most European countries. It has been estimated that 12 million Americans live with a neglected parasitic infection. The U.S. has the highest prevalence of obesity in the developed world, which is something we pointed out many times over, which is odd considering that we have all of these supposed healthcare advancements. In terms of access to water and sanitation, the U.S. ranks 36th in the world, which is probably not very shocking to most people, especially those in places like Flint, Michigan, where this problem continues to go on despite the fact that it's never even been addressed. But we've shown that all across the United States have contaminants in their water well above the allowed levels. America has the highest incarceration rate in the world, ahead of Turkmenistan, El Salvador, Cuba, Thailand, and the Russian Federation. Its rate is nearly five times the OECD average. The youth poverty rate in the United States is the highest across the OECD, with one quarter of the youth living in poverty, compared to less than 14% across the OECD. In the OECD, the U.S. ranks 35th out of 37 in terms of poverty and inequality. That is alarming. According to the World Income Inequality Database, the U.S. has the highest Gini rate, which is how they measure inequality, of all Western countries. The Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality characterizes the U.S. as, quote, a clear and consistent outlier in the child poverty league. U.S. child poverty rates are the highest among the sixth richest countries, Canada, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Sweden, and Norway. In practice, the United States is alone among developed countries in insisting that while human rights are of fundamental importance, they do not include rights that guard against dying of hunger, dying of a lack of access to affordable health care, or growing up in a context of total deprivation. That's an important point, continuing to say that despite the statement of human rights being so important, which we constantly point out, all of these things are happening. At the end of the day, particularly in a rich country like the U.S., the persistence of extreme poverty is a political choice made by those in power. With political will, it could readily be eliminated. And those are powerful words from someone like him. And that's a very shocking thing to see. Many of these points are ones that I've brought to your attention in the past. But the real takeaway here, as the U.S. spends exponentially more money on the military and waging wars of conquest around the world in your name, killing untold civilians and radicalizing scores more, and while even the countries recently outlined by the Trump administration as the largest threats spend far less, even decreasing over the years, is that all of this is a choice. And that choice, coincidentally, continues to displace millions of families and creates millions of refugees, wherein we recently pointed out a vast amount of these children have gone missing. And you need to ask yourself, with all of the uber American propaganda aside, does allowing this to continue for the sake of the military-industrial complex represent you as an American? Hopefully the answer is no. as all of this, all the poverty, all the hunger, all the disease and homelessness can end. If only they cared to put even a fraction of the $1 trillion it will selfishly spend to maintain this facade. As I said in the beginning, even one voice can make all the difference. Show them, show the world, that this does not represent Americans. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.